Hello and welcome to another edition of Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Manitoba Cooperator Editor Gord Gilmore. It's election season in Canada, and the nation is headed to the polls September 20th. We'll be checking in a bit later with D.C. Fraser, our Ottawa correspondent, about what he's expecting of the campaign.
To me, that seems like farmers won't be seen as like a super valuable voter bloc for either party.
And Markets Farm's Bruce Burnett tells us about all the production estimate revisions of recent days and how they'll be affecting farmers.
High prices are great, but if you have nothing to sell into them, it's really not a great situation for you.
And we'll also be looking at a direct-to-consumer farm operation in rural Ontario that turned the pandemic into a win. And there'll be a special interview with FarmLink. But first, some information we'd like you to know. You can now find us on YouTube. Just search Between the Rows Podcast. I repeat, Between the Rows Podcast. And you'll find the latest episodes as well as our evergreen archive. And we're going to be using our YouTube space to post resources on stories and even pictures and video. We're also hoping it's going to be a place where you'll drop us a line or let us know what you think about BTR. Or tell us about a story in your community we should be taking a look at. So again, head over to YouTube and search for Between the Rows Podcast. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.
And now, Farmtario reporter Diana Martin travels to a farm in Croton, Ontario to meet Emma Butler. Emma and her husband Josh launched J&E Meats in 2018, a brick-and-mortar shop to sell their beef, lamb, and chicken. But it's their online, direct-to-consumer operation that skyrocketed once the pandemic hit.
Yes, our on-farm store opened in summer of 2019. We just kind of did a soft opening, and then the plan was be open softly in 2019, kind of grow as we could towards the Christmas time, and then in the new year, so in 2020, the plan was, then we'll have, you know, a grand opening, an open farm day, you know, do the whole thing, invite families out here. And then the pandemic hit and everything kind of came to a screeching halt. And then we also were expecting our third baby as well, too. So it actually kind of all coincided really well for us because we were able to scale our business and not get too far ahead of ourselves and still enjoy our new person in our life. And then also scale our business model to something where we could manage it because it was kind of getting away on us. Like, we were so busy from the day we opened our doors because we did operate prior. We started our business in 2018. Just operating from our house. So when we built our store, it gave us a lot more opportunity and demand was definitely there and our community was there for us and it was awesome, but we were growing too fast beyond what I could handle as a bit of a one-man show in terms of store and online and, you know, customers and orders and all that kind of stuff. So it actually worked out just the way that it was supposed to. Like, the pandemic gave us a lot of time to regroup and to kind of share our story the way that we always wanted to without feeling like we were being overwhelmed or overcome. So, shocking or not, I'm super stubborn and I did not want to have a website at all. That was like not my game plan, not for a year. I wanted to get like a year of full business under our belt, just operate on social media and word of mouth, so that we could scale it, because once you kind of have a website, it's a full-time job that nobody thinks about. And I sort of, like, as a piece of advice to anybody else running their own business, it's like when you commit to a website, you're very committed. You're constantly updating it. People have access to you all the time, which is really awesome that, you know, you can go to sleep and wake up in the morning and have five orders. Yes, that's fantastic, but it's also a lot more work. It's like one more thing on your plate. It's one more thing to balance inventory management wise as well too, because if you're like me and you have a brick and mortar and you operate digitally as well too, you know, you kind of have to reserve certain inventory for certain things and allocate it in different directions as you have it, because the customers don't know. They're not, you know, looking at your freezers or looking at your inventory, so they don't know, which is awesome. So it wasn't really like a service that I went with. I just went right in deep, got our own website. Our point of sale system is kind of who we went through, so everything's all linked through our point of sale system, which is really awesome for us in management-wise, inventory management, sales, all that kind of stuff. And I think for us, one of the most beneficial things now that we have it figured out, and one of the most beneficial things that happened during the pandemic was it happened, and then all of a sudden, every single person on the planet turned shopping online. So for us, it gave us a channel to be able to still continue to operate, even though our on-farm store was closed, we were facing inventory issues, etc. We were able to still gain new customers, still gain new sales. Our customers didn't mind waiting 5 weeks for their order. Like, they didn't care. They didn't complain. They just were happy to support us and know that they could still be fulfilled. And then also, it was another plus because it got me really good at operating website, and it got me a lot of experience in a very short amount of time doing online inventory management and fulfilling orders and, you know, connecting with our customers and making deliveries, because I also deliver myself as well. I don't use third-party delivery companies. It's all me. So it got me really good at all the things that, you know, might have taken more time to get better at. So I'm really actually kind of grateful for the experience, because now I'm a pro. So when we started the business in 2018, our five-year goal at that time was at some point in the next 5 years, we want to have a little on-farm store, you know, raise our family kind of quietly, get our kids a little bigger because we have three kids under the age of three. So we kind of wanted that to be our five-year plan. Started our business in 2018. It was so well received that we kind of just jumped right into it, and we're like, I guess we're going to build an on-farm store in the spring. So we did that and accomplished that, and then we opened in 2019. Flash forward to the pandemic in 2020 and our surge in business. We closed there briefly for a little bit, as kind of everybody did. Nobody really knew what was going on. And like we said, we just had a lot of personal stuff going on as well, too. So it worked out best for us and our family. And then flash forward, we opened again in August 2020. And then we've just been kind of climbing and surging forward ever since. And now our, you know, our original 10-year goal has now been definitely upped to like 2022. We want to expand our retail space and then be able just to offer more to our community, more to our customers. We'd love to expand more into agritourism as well, too, and really give something for people to come to in Chatham Kent and to see and to explore, and really just show them kind of what living in a rural area in Ontario is like and just how beautiful it really is. Yeah, so now going forward, it's actually been nice. Like, I know we keep talking about the pandemic, but it's been nice because it showed us that, like, this is a real thing. Like, we're building something, and we've built something that is sustainable and that is going to contribute to our farm and that does contribute to our bottom line and that is going to give a future for myself and my husband and our three children. Like, this is very much our succession plan, you know, for our farm. It adds an element to our operation that we didn't have before. And then it's also kind of given inspiration to some other producers that are not only just in this province, but across Canada too, that have, you know, reached out to us and said, hey, like, what are you doing? It's a great idea. How do I do something like that? Because I want my homestead or my farm to be able to have that kind of sustainability and that sustainable element as well too. So it's nice because it's really been encouraging to show us that, you know, we're not wasting our time and we're not playing around. Like, this is our career, you know, farming is our career. So it's nice that through Janie Meats and our on-farm store, we've been able to really solidify that to our community and to ourselves, that this is real. This isn't just, you know, we're not operating at a lower level than we thought. We're operating at a lot higher level than we thought. So yeah, our future is just to keep going and keep growing and just to be able to expand, to give more to our customers and more to our children and just kind of see where it goes. Like, the sky is really the limit with it, and the opportunities are there. So surely no time like the present. So we're going to just kind of go forward with our plans and see where things end up. That's it. We're taking on the world.
It's always nice to hear a good news story, You're listening to Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Manitoba Cooperator Editor Gord Gilmore. A little later in the show, Bruce Burnett of Markets Farm will guide us through all those lowered production estimates and what they mean to you. But first, yet another federal election is upon us, this time after less than 2 years since the last poll. We're joined now by our Ottawa correspondent, DC Fraser, who will give us the inside track on this political horse race from a farm perspective. DC, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So as someone who watches the federal political scene closely, do you expect agriculture to have much profile in the campaign?
You know what, maybe not directly, but I do think we'll hear the odd mention of agriculture, just given the drought and the ongoing impacts of climate change. You know, leading up to this election, I think we've heard from some federal parties about like the key role they believe agriculture will play in pandemic recovery plans. The Liberals and Conservatives have both dedicated parts of those specific plans to agriculture, for example. But realistically, I think it's going to be the case with most elections in Canada, and agriculture will be overshadowed by other issues a little bit.
And in terms of the industry, what are some of the key areas agricultural stakeholders are identifying and trying to interject into the campaign?
Sure. So we're seeing, you know, a lot of those usual topics pop up, of course. There's the regular calls for more investment in rural internet services, for example. And most stakeholder groups seem to have a pretty significant nod to, again, agriculture being an economic engine. And at the heart of that is essentially the ask for more financial supports to invest, research, and grow businesses. And you know, considering the incoming government could feature fairly prominently into negotiations for provinces for the next federal agricultural policy framework, this and all that comes with that, like reforms to business management programs and stuff like that, it will probably get a little bit more attention, at least from stakeholders this time around, I think. And of course, there's a heightened focus on climate change and the role agriculture plays in the fight against it. And we've seen that in some of the early literature coming out from stakeholder groups like the Canadian Federation of Agriculture, for example.
And now you've sort of alluded to this, but I'd like to dive down a little bit further into it. What are the stakes of this election for the agriculture sector?
I think when you look at the different recovery plans for the Conservatives, like, and the Liberals, they do seem to share a lot of similarities, defending supply management, opening up or improving international trade markets, business risk management program changes. Broadly, there isn't a lot of difference between the two parties when you look at those issues. But of course, if you drill down, you can find some specifics. But in terms of what's at stake, truly, I think for farmers here is the role that the climate will play and how that will impact agriculture in the future. You know, we have a major international climate conference coming up. It's the latest iteration of the conference that spawned the Paris Agreement a few years ago. There's another UN-led effort right now specifically focusing on redesigning food systems and how to more work the environment and climate-friendly policies to that. That's all on the horizon, and how Canada represents itself at those meetings and what we commit to internationally will have a pretty significant impact on producers in Canada. And so the next government is likely going to be the government that represents Canadian producers at those tables.
And now, as we're early on in the campaign right now, just a couple of days into it as we speak, what are you going to be watching as the campaign wears on? Are there sort of key issues that you're going to be keying in on? Who are the people that you're going to be following?
For one, I'll be looking to see just how much effort the Liberals put into to court farmers and the farmer votes. They know likely that Prairie provinces aren't going to vote for them. Conservatives are telegraphing that they're going to have an even greater share of the popular vote in Saskatchewan, for example, than they got the last time around. And of course, as we all know, Saskatchewan went entirely blue. To me, that seems like farmers won't be seen as like a super valuable voter block for either party, particularly because the election is once again probably going to be decided in Quebec and Ontario by voters there. I think what I'll be watching is Trudeau and the Liberals called this election with the expectation it would deliver them a majority. We know the Prime Minister has survived a handful of scandals to this point, and recent polling, specifically out of Central Canada, leads me to believe that he'll get his wish of a four-year mandate. But as we know, and as you say there, elections are long, and I think we're about to find out how good of a campaigner Mr. Aaron O'Toole is for the Conservatives.
Thank you for that. I appreciate you taking the time and leading us through some of this.
Yeah, happy to be here as always. Thanks so much.
That was Glacier Farm Media's Ottawa correspondent DC Fraser with some insight into the federal election. I'm Gord Gilmore, and you're listening to Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. Our next item is a special feature interview from our sponsor, FarmLink Marketing Solutions.
So today I'm here with Mark Lepp, CEO of FarmLink, to talk about how farmers can maximize the returns through a customized grain marketing strategy. But first of all, Mark, let's just get started with a basic question of getting you to define what you mean by grain marketing.
Thanks, Kevin. That's a great question. You know, grain marketing isn't an entirely new idea. You know, we recognize that many producers might not be aware of what exactly it is and what the advantages are to developing a customized grain marketing strategy for their farming operation. You know, really, grain marketing is a series of informed decisions and subsequent actions that turn grain into a profit. It really considers two things, market analysis being one and marketing decisions being the second one. And those two considerations put you in control of your grain. So, you know, what do I mean by that? Market analysis being the first component, it really focuses on external factors like macro trends, the local prices, you know, weather, politics, global trends. You know, as an example, you know, we're seeing this now with the drought in Western Canada. Supply is too tight, demand is high, and therefore we have record prices. So that's the one part of grain marketing. The second part is marketing decisions. And really those are 100% about the farm and the operation itself. You know, they're smart decisions around taking the crop that producers work so hard to grow and turning it into cash. You know, these decisions focus on internal factors, which are many, but a couple could be things like risk management, cash flow needs, management styles, and individual business goals.
So Mark, for a lot of growers, grain marketing means deciding which elevator they want to deliver to or broker they want to deal with. How is what you're talking about different?
What's different is, you know, it's the combination of those two factors, like the market analysis and the decisions. And really what it's not is a grain elevator or the execution part of that. Although whether it's a grain buyer, like an elevator or a broker, you know, those are key players in the marketing, grain marketing journey. Grain elevators and brokers are not part of grain marketing. And the reason for that is, you know, there's, you know, it's a short-term mindset. It's, you know, the prices are important on the execution side. And it's really important to understand where the opportunities are and when it's time to sell, that you're finding the best place to sell it to. But what's really is important in grain marketing is that there's, you know, you get an unbiased second opinion that those that you're working with, that's not a conflict of interest. And by that, you know, to that, you know, it's kind of like the second part of the grain marketing piece, which is the marketing decisions that are 100% about your farm. You need to put together those strategies that are relevant for your operation, and elevators or brokers are a key part of the execution and part of that journey, but they're not what true grain marketing is.
So as an established grain marketing company, what exactly does FarmLink do for producers then?
Well, we exist to help every producer achieve their financial goals. You know, we, through advanced data and customer service, we help producers make the right grain marketing decisions at the right time. You know, we're doing our job if producers are earning what they deserve for doing their job. You know, we believe producers' work is worth more.
So Mark, we've seen crop inputs and farm equipment progress wildly over the last 20 years, but you know, grain marketing has pretty much stayed the same. How do you see FarmLink changing the future of grain marketing?
Well, what we're working on is to really revolutionize grain marketing. And we're doing that by using advanced and timely technology powered by people. We've created a new grain marketing platform called GrainFox. And what it does is it uses FarmLink's market analysis. It's backed by a team of analysts. We have a network of local grain marketing advisors working with our customers, and also with 20 years of statistical and historical data behind it to help bring that power of GrainFox to our customers.
So Mark, what is GrainFox?
Well, GrainFox gives producers up-to-the-minute grain marketing insights and recommendations. It'll be Western Canada's first grain marketing platform. And the features that it would have is, you know, we're using machine learning analysis and recommendations to bring growers predictive sales recommendations, price trends, market forecasters, or a market forecaster specific for their operation. It has a comprehensive grain marketing, grain management system, a local price mapper, which allows, as I mentioned before, like those marketing decisions that are 100% of the farm. It really brings all of those considerations of the farm and all the external factors into one platform, right for each producer.
Perhaps you could describe or summarize the key features.
Okay. Yeah. GrainFox is a grain marketing technology tool, and it gives producers really three main things: financial power, automation with a human touch, and unbiased advisor support on demand. So, you know, with the financial power, it allows you to know what you have, what it's worth, when to sell, and most importantly, why. You know, with the automation with the human touch, what I mean by that is a producer is in control of production, and we're here to help navigate of the decision of when to sell. And the unbiased advisor support on demand, you know, producers can get a quick second opinion whenever they need it to sell with that confidence that they need to execute their plan.
So Mark, if producers are looking to learn more about FarmLink and GrainFox, how do they go about doing that?
Well, they can visit our website. It's farmlinksolutions.ca to learn more about it. And on there, there's a button to click and they can try GrainFox for free for 90 days.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mark, for coming on Between the Rows. So that was Mark Lepp of FarmLink on today's edition of Between the Rows.
You're listening to Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. We're joined now by Bruce Burnett of Markets Farm. He's going to run us through why the production numbers seem to be falling everywhere this season. Bruce, thanks for being here today.
Good to be here.
So it seems to me I've seen a whole lot of downward production estimates lately, and to me it feels like they're coming out pretty late in the season. You know, I've seen things coming out of Europe, I've seen things coming out of the US, Canada, of course. Is this in fact an unusual situation to be in this late in the game?
Well, I think it just has to deal with our growing season and where we've seen some production problems. More than being atypical. Certainly in Western Canada, we've had a drought. The northern plains of the U.S. have had a drought. And so the crop development cycle for those crops, you don't get to see estimates until, later on July, August, that time frame. In fact, we haven't seen a Statistics Canada estimate yet for our crop, and that won't occur until the end of the month. So it just happens to be that the spring wheat growing areas in parts of Russia and Kazakhstan, as well as in North America, have been undergoing a pretty big drought in both areas, and that's been pulling production estimates down. In other parts of the globe, though, it is significant that late in the season, we're seeing crops drop off as well. So in Russia, not only are the spring wheat crops dropping in terms of their yield, the yields potential, but the harvest of the winter wheat crop in Russia is indicating that yields aren't nearly as good as what people were expecting, let's say, a couple of months ago. So that, I think, is a little bit exceptional to see a drop off in some of the winter wheat estimates here. Of course, in Europe, we've had some weather issues in terms of too much rain in parts of France, Germany, those major producers, which has cut into maybe some of the yield prospects, but more so the quality of the crop this year as well.
What are some of the key revisions then that you've been watching and that you will keep watching as time runs on?
Well, I think certainly in terms of the North American crop, we have a reasonable handle. As you mentioned, the USDA has dropped the Canadian production downward to 24 million tons for all wheat. Again, I think they're probably going to have to reduce that number in the coming months here, but we won't see as large a projection drop. Again, I would say parts of Russia and Kazakhstan, they will need to move their numbers lower, but it won't be dramatic. So the numbers I'm going to be more interested in is how the South American crop is progressing. We have pretty good moisture conditions in Australia right now, and so that would tend us for us to believe that we're going to have a pretty good crop there. But we are dry in Argentina, and again, with some of the downgrades in terms of production, Argentina is going to be one of those key producing areas that could make a difference in this marketing year.
Now, I've already seen some commentators who watch the markets a lot more closely than I do say that they're, in their view, it sets the stage for an explosive market through this winter. Is this a view you share?
Yeah, we've gone from a sort of a narrative of lots of wheat around to a lot tighter wheat supplies this year. And so that is setting us up for an explosive move higher, but only if we see some problems develop with the 22 winter wheat crop. The 21 winter wheat crop has been harvested now, so we're going to get into planting season in the, let's say, U.S., Europe, Russia, in the coming weeks and months. And any problems that we would have developing in those areas, I think certainly could lead us higher in terms of prices. The all-time spring wheat record high was set in the 2007-08 marketing year, and that wasn't a particularly difficult crop on the spring wheat side, but we certainly saw a lot of demand come in because we were looking at drought conditions in the winter wheat crop. So that was the issue that spurred demand for spring wheat and reduced supplies. So I think there's the potential for that to happen this year, but we'll have to wait and see in terms of the weather. Certainly the prices right now are giving farmers an incentive in winter wheat growing regions to plant as much area as they possibly can.
And now I guess the cynic in me says, will this be a situation though where it could be one of those pyrrhic victories for farmers in Western Canada as they watch prices run higher and really not have much to sell?
Well, certainly I think that's the biggest disappointment this year is that we are facing the most severe drought conditions that we have since 1988. And yields are going to be low, and there will be some farmers that get, let's say, reasonable yields if you got some timely rains. But for the vast majority of farmers, we're going to see very, very low levels of production, levels that we haven't seen probably since back in 1988. So or the early 2000s. So again, as you say, high prices are great, but if you have nothing to sell into them, it's really not a great situation for you. The only positive part from this is that it gives us an opportunity maybe next year, if production does recover in the prairies, to capture some of these higher prices, because I think the higher prices, maybe not where they're at right now, but again, above average prices are probably going to be here to stay even through the next crop year as well.
Bruce, as always, thanks for helping us make sense of that.
Thank you.
That was Bruce Burnett of Markets Farm, wrapping up another edition of Between the Rows. But before we go, if you'd like to find out more about those market revisions or read about those direct marketers and their successes, head on over to our YouTube channel, where you'll find links to those stories. Just search Between the Rows podcast. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, saying so long, and we hope you'll join us again for our next episode.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further, We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app, GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.